Welcome to A Public Affair. And thank you for joining us again for another session of KGNU Community Radio. In studio today, we have some great guests here from the local Denver metro area. We have two gentlemen from the GES Coalition here from Focus Points. And we're going to be talking about some health, wellness, and housing initiatives that these gentlemen are advocates for, and getting a little more information about their organization. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, this is your first time doing an in-studio interview, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves? We have Ray in the studio, and then we also have...
My name is Robin Reichardt.
So we got Robin and Ray.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys switch seats on me, okay?
All right.
Yeah. Okay, so Robin, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you said you're a member of GES, and you've been in North Denver for about five generations.
That's Ray.
That's Ray?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get this straight, right?
Okay.
So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, Robin?
Okay, I'm a community organizer with the Global Leary Swansea Coalition Organizing for Health and Housing Justice. And I live in Swansea. My father won and got another one on the way.
Okay.
I'm a fourth generation North Denver resident, and I currently live in Glouville. Have two kids that one daughter, she's still, you know, a little baby, and the other one is going to Garden Place Elementary School.
Oh, awesome. Now, what made you guys decide to get involved in the GES initiative and coalition?
You know, we were working on a nonprofit-based initiative a couple years ago around microbusiness development in the neighborhood, working with women to get their training and build their business around prepared food. A lot of women from Mexico, El Salvador. And what we were noticing, this is back about 2015, is that a lot of the women in the program were starting to be displaced from the neighborhood. And we went out and... At that time, we were, like I said, working on more health and microbusiness, and we started to think maybe we're working on the wrong thing. In the spring of 2016, we went out with about 40 neighbors with the support of nine nonprofits in the Globeville, Leary, Swansea neighborhood, and we knocked on doors. We talked to our neighbors. We knocked on about 1,500 doors, talked to 500 of our neighbors, and what we found was a lot worse than what we thought. What we found was that about 88% of the neighborhood's at risk of displacement. And we get that number from 88% of the neighbors don't earn enough to pay the average rent in Denver.
Now, do you think it's because they just do not have the training and the professional skills to get the wages that they could potentially earn?
Well, it's really a little bit of a lot of factors that come in. It's not only economic, it's also education and resources. There's very little resources that have been provided to a lot of the folks in the community, as well as just not a lot of communication between the residents that live there and any type of organizations that are providing those resources.
Now, where do you think the disconnect is, Ray? Why do you feel that there's such a delineation between, you know, training, job opportunities, getting the actual education to go into the job market and having somewhat even playing field with other people of other cultures and other races in this area?
Well, part of the disconnect is a cultural thing. You know, the community is very mistrusting of a lot of outside influences because they have been burnt in the past. A lot of people make promises. They come into the neighborhood and they don't follow through with those promises. So, you know, whenever people do come to try to offer help, it's they're very hesitant to go ahead and participate in a lot of the things that are going on. So, you know, a main disconnect within the community is just a lack of communication, a lack of information that comes from a lot of those organizations and government as well.
And I think if just to add something there, the historical context is that these are neighborhoods among many that were redlined in the past, you know, so For generations, families and businesses were denied loans, while loans and more families and businesses in more affluent parts of Denver were provided those loans. So these neighborhoods have been targeted and economically excluded from public spending for more than a century. And so when, you know, even today, half of the sidewalk grid is unfinished in the neighborhood. Where I live, there's the drainage isn't finished. You know, there's still not a bridge over 47th and York where kids are delayed by Union Pacific lines from going to school. So I think that, you know, there's been a real long history of racial injustice targeted, you know, at the hands of the city. And I think if we're going to talk about getting on a level playing field, we have to address those historic injustices.
Now, with those historic injustices, have and I'm just assuming that you guys have gone or tried to interact with your local government, your city council, to try to get some movement on this and get more participation from the local government. Have you guys tried that? And if so, what type of feedback are you getting?
Well, we've constantly been at city council meetings and housing committees that have been set up by the city, and a lot of the feedback that we're getting is a lot of them are just basically saying, "Well, we really can't help you right now. There's, you know, there's other issues that they're dealing with, or they don't have any answers for us to, you know, get solutions to these problems." We have had, you know, good feedback on what we're trying to do and the things that we are saying. We just haven't had any solid solutions being offered to us from the city or the state.
So you believe that the city is kind of just pacifying you and stalling on you, more or less?
Well, I think what's difficult is they have a different interest, and some of the context there is that there's multi-billion-dollar investment slated for the I-70 redevelopment, and there's multi-billion-dollar investment slated for the National Western Center redevelopment. Those two, since about 2013, since those numbers were shored up, there's been a huge spike in the consequence of those planned investments that are public money, private money, is there's been a huge spike in the speculative housing market. And so the compounding on this, you know, not the CDOT is project is taking 56 homes from the neighborhood through eminent domain. The National Western is taking a big number of homes. And then on top of that, with all these billions of dollars promised to be coming in the neighborhood as part of the mayor's kind of new gateway to the city, we've got this speculative housing market that has just exploded. So just to give some examples, we know from a study that between 2013 and 2016, a third of the homes in the neighborhood changed hands. And half of those homes, about 17% of the homes, were sold to private LLCs and LLPs. And those are that allows a shell landlord to essentially do what they want. You know, not in the case of members of the coalition, they had their house bought out from under them by a shell LLC that was formed the day before the closing of the house. The rent was doubled from $600 to $1,200. These are old homes that have major, major issues. And the rent was doubled with no repairs. And when they asked for some repairs, they said, if you don't like it, you can find somewhere else. And in a housing market where there's just no housing stock, your options are none.
They're close to none. So in these situations where the properties, because in most cases, these very kind citizens are not in a position to buy. So they're at the behest or the beholding of the property owner. And if they decide to go ahead and sell with little or no notice, and in most cases violate probably most rental laws
and
rights. And I'm not implying that all property owners do that. Let me just make that very clear. But it seems like to me the value of the dollar is more important than keeping their tenants safe and giving them an opportunity to safely transition out of their property. So they go in, jack the price up, and then they get displaced, knowing full well in most cases that these people cannot afford to move anywhere else.
Right.
Yes.
And you know, just to let everyone know, a lot of the folks out in these neighborhoods, more than half of them make less than $25,000 a year. So that's, you know, considering that the Denver's average income, you know, annually is about $88,000, that's less than a third of, you know, actual income that is going towards housing, going towards food, clothes, you know, for their kids that are going to school. So it makes it really difficult, you know, for a multi-billion dollar project to come into the neighborhood and for a lot of the residents to be able to actually step up and make a big difference, because, you know, along with the food, clothing, and the home aspect, the taxes in the area in the last 4 years have increased 130%.
And that's about three times the city average.
Yeah, three times the city average. So it's the poorest folks of the city are paying the most taxes and getting very little to no benefits out of those taxes.
Wow, guys, this is very enlightening, and I'm so glad that we have you in studio to discuss these very relevant issues. We are talking to Ray and Robin from the Globalville Elyria Swansea. Is it Swansea?
Swansea.
Okay, I always want to put a ea on that. Right. But we're talking with Robin and Ray from the Globalville Elyria Swansea Coalition. And I know in reading some of your information about your organization, you guys try to promote wellness and health amongst your community members as well, and try to provide them, you know, with, you know, the best resources to get good food and exercise. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, we know that health is central to family life, and we know that, like I mentioned, that micro-business program we were working on, that we really wanted to, we were stressing the link that your health choices are based on your income. And so if you don't have the income, you don't have, you know, right now it's really popular to talk about healthy food and healthy choices, and there's a lot of great programs, but if you don't have the income, you don't have the choice to buy that food, and if you don't have the income, you don't have the choice to those recreation options. So that was kind of the start, and as we moved our focus into housing, we realized that the housing folks aren't talking about the health of your housing and your displacement, and the health folks aren't talking about housing. And we know that the Center for Disease Control considers housing, safe and accessible housing, to be the number one social determinant of your health. And it's real basic. If you don't have a safe and accessible place to live, you don't have anywhere to build your job, your education, your kids' life.
Right. And I also just wanted to add that, you know, during this time that we have been doing a lot of these surveys and data collection, I've actually started a nutrition program at Garden Place Academy, the Garden Place Gourmets, and with the help of the coalition, we have been able to provide some kids with some more nutritious options, some education of nutrition, of more healthy alternatives. And the hard thing is that, you know, with all the income, you know, the income problems with a lot of the families, because they have to feed their families on, you know, sometimes less than $50 a week, which is nothing really, you know, and they have a family of more than four, you know, so the options are very small. And when you have, you know, fast food chains offering 20 chicken nuggets for a dollar or, you know, whatever, it's very, very easy to fall into bad habits. And again, it starts to create even more issues with health, because, you know, a lot of the folks here with these lower incomes are already susceptible to becoming diabetic, having heart disease, asthma, cancers. And then you add on top of that the air quality, which is the worst in the whole United States. 80216 has the worst air quality in the country. You put that on top of all these other health issues, including stress, it makes for a powder keg of a health crisis. And the government, you know, our city government, and as well as our state, needs to be aware of what's going on and also be able to address those issues and be able to have that connection with the community to have a communication about what's going on.
So it's more or less, it is just a conundrum that just keeps repeating itself, because they don't have the economics, they do not have the education, they do not have the income. So they are solely reliant on people to try to help elevate them and give them an opportunity to do better. But you can't do better if people won't help you. So if you're almost 100% relied on other people, meaning government, meaning other people's kindness or legislation of your local officials to help move you forward, and you keep, you know, being re-siphoned back into the same, silo. As citizens of the state and of the city, what short-term and long-term solutions do we have to address this?
Unfortunately, the picture's grim. In the state of Colorado, there was a Supreme Court case that the state of Colorado versus Telluride back in the early 90s that made rent control completely illegal. This is one of the most renter-unfriendly states, one of the most landlord-friendly states. When we talk about these historic injustices, the playing field is so skewed. And when we talk about subsidy and talk about these kind of benefits, it's not low-income people that are, it's corporations that are getting the subsidy. We're looking for a piece, and we don't want the city to come in and do something for the neighborhood. That kind of continues the long trend of colonization of the neighborhood. What we're looking for is that the neighbors have a seat at the table. And this is a neighborhood that is incredibly resilient. It's been a bed of grassroots activity since the beginning. There's, the neighbors stopped the Olympics from coming there in 72. They fought the ASARCO smelter and got the EPA to recognize two Superfund sites in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what we're, our vision is to protect our neighbors, to prevent displacement, and to preserve affordable housing. And so I think our short-term solution is, right now the city's putting up emergency funds for housing, but they don't count gentrification-driven displacement as the emergency. And so to get that emergency fund, you have to prove that you can, if your son breaks his arm this month, you just got to prove that you got to pay that rent every other month. And on the long-term solution, we're really looking at how a community can preserve that affordability through community-driven land trusts.
Awesome. Now, guys, I hate to say this, but our time has come to an end already. But I would love to have you guys back in the studio to give you some more time. And I do want to apologize to the audience this morning. We got started a little late, and these guys are so fabulous. We want to bring them back for another visit in a couple weeks. Would you guys like to come back?
Absolutely.
Okay,
and
because
I just have one more thing to say real quick. It's gescoalition.com. You can take a look at the data yourself. So gescoalition.com, go ahead and take a look at that. If anybody can help, you can go ahead and contact us through that website.
Robin and Ray, you guys are tremendous assets and advocates to our community, and we are
thank
so
you.
Honored to have you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time and your patience today and your ongoing contributions to the citizens of Denver and the citizens of Colorado. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Public Affairs. I'm your host, Tish Buford. Once again, we have had Robin and Ray in studio with us from Globalville Elyria Swansea Coalition Organization, and you've been listening to KGNU Community Radio. Thank you for listening, and have a good day.